The following lecture was delivered at the 17th Annual National Jewish Retreat in Palm Desert, California, a project of the Rohr Jewish Learning Institute. We hope you enjoy it. We encourage you to visit jretreat.com for information on upcoming retreats. Rabbi Mordechai Farkash now presents his lecture, Decoding the Ketubah.
The first reference and source for the Ketubah idea is already found in the story of Abraham and Sarah. The Midrash tells us that when Sarah was kidnapped by Pharaoh, and then with God's interference, he let her go, but he gave her also gifts. He showered Abraham with gifts. The Midrash says that one of the gifts that Pharaoh shared with Sarah was the city of Goshen, which Goshen later became the place where the Jews, Jacob and his family, settled in Egypt for the 200 years they were there, 210 years. The Midrash uses the words that Pharaoh gave it to here as a ketubah settlement, meaning he was looking to marry her. So when he married Sarah, never ended up having a relationship with her, but he was getting ready to marry her. And he had to organize himself with a ketubah, a contract, and Goshen was a gift of that original marriage, to the point that even Jewish mysticism teaches that the fact that it belonged to Sarah, that's why it preserved a certain sanctity, a certain holiness into this place of Goshen, which prepared it kind of and allowed Jacob and his family to come and join Goshen later when they arrived, and being the source and place for the Jewish people. So this is maybe not such a known midrash, but Rashi, the commentary of Chumash, those mention at least two times in the book of Bereishit a reference specifically to the ketubah. Rashi speaks about Rebecca, the second of our matriarchs, who he is now sending your son Jacob to pick up two goats to prepare a delicacy for your husband Isaac when he was planning to give the blessings to Esau, and she wanted the blessings to go to Jacob. So she tells her son, go ahead and bring me two goats, which I'm going to prepare as a delicacy for your father, so he shall bless you. And Rashi says, where is Rebecca taking two goats to prepare and to give to your husband, mitat perhaps his knowledge? And Rashi says that was a deal which was contracted in the ketubah between Isaac and Rebecca, that every day she can pick up two goats for herself. There was a ksuva condition. The third source is again in Rashi and the Chumash, and this is now with the third of our patriarchs, and this is Jacob. Jacob is in Egypt, many years without his father. Joseph is in Egypt, many years without his father, Jacob. Jacob is coming down to Egypt. And Joseph introduces his children, Manasseh and Ephraim, to their Zaidi, to his father, Jacob. And what does he say? Banai em, this is my sons, asher natan li Elokim bezed, that God had given to me. And Rashi comments that Joseph wanted to ensure his father that these children are from a valid marriage. He showed them the ketubah contract, which was between him and his wife Osnat, Joseph's wife, and Heraloi Rashi says, he showed them Shtar Ketubah. You see that? We were married halachically. We were married kosher. So you can know and you can believe that our children are valid children. This is three of many other very interesting sources of the earliest of time to indicate that the concept of ketubah actually existed before it was formalized and organized and became a part of a Jewish wedding. Now, what is the ketubah in essence? Literally, the word ketubah comes from the Hebrew word ktav. Ktav means a written document. It's called a ktav. And you would wonder, so why do you call it ketubah if you can call it ktav? What's the extra two letters? Because the way you spell the letter ktav in Hebrew is a chaf and a taf and a vase that make it ktav. When you want to write the word ketubah, then you add a vav and a hey, and you have seemingly two unnecessary letters to make a new word, ketubah, if it would be just fine to call it ktav. And I'm mentioning it in the beginning of the class because I think it will inspire us to understand even further the importance of the ketubah. What I'm sharing it with you now was related in the name of the great Hasidic master, Reb Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev. And it's recorded in a book of one of his students, which himself was a Hasidic rabbi, Reb Yitzchak of Neshchiz. And this is what he says. A husband and wife, a groom and bride, they get married. What is the name of the man in Hebrew? Ish. What's the word for the woman in Hebrew? Isha. The Talmud makes the famous observation that the man brings the letter Yud of God's infinite name, of the Yud and the He and the Vav and the He. It is the man, the husband, who represents the letter Yud. That's why he has the Yud, Ish. The woman, the bride, brings with her the letter He of God's name, and that's why she is called Isha. That's why the Talmud says we got to make sure, this is just in parentheses, the Talmud says we got to make sure to keep God in your presence, because if the Yud leaves, what happens to the word Ish? Esh. What is Esh in Hebrew? Shh. And if the Hay leaves, again, Esh. You don't want to have fire attracting fire. You got to make sure that God is always in your midst. This is actually a Talmudic observation. This is not Kabbalah. But building on that principle, says Reb Levi Yitzchak of Berdichev, the man, the groom, brought along the Yud of God. The woman brought along the Hay. So you have the Yud K, the Yud and the Hay. But this is only half of a name. What happens to God's complete name? Isn't his name Yud K and Vavin K? Says Reb Levi Yitzchak, that's where the ketubah comes in. Our sages came and taught us, when you get married halachically and you are introducing your wife with a proper ketubah, ketubah is really only a ktav. It's a contract, a written document. But with their divine wisdom, they named it ketubah by adding the letter vav and hey to the ktav to allude to us this important concept that when you married with a ketubah, you have the completion of God's name. You have the yud and the hey of the husband and wife, the vav and the hey of the ketubah, and that's how you have the full presence of the Shekhinah, of the divine presence in your marriage. I believe that this on its own should be a tremendous source of inspiration for all of us to make sure that our ketubot are present, and number two, that our ketubot are actually written and valid for serving that purpose. But now let's come and discuss the very concept of the ketubah itself. So even though the ketubah and the word ketav actually means a written document, which will refer legally, halachically, to the shtar. Shtar means the document which carries the conditions and the responsibilities of that marriage. In Talmudic literature, there's a whole tractate of Talmud called Masechet Ketubot. It's actually one of the bigger ones. And if you study that subject and you study the tractate of Talmud, you realize that Ketuvah became the title for all responsibilities and agreements which take place in a Jewish marriage. Mainly, listen, dear woman and man, mainly as referring to the man's responsibility, or I should say the husband's responsibility towards his wife. When you read the ketubah, you study it, you realize that the spirit of the ketubah, the letters, the wording, it all represents what he is responsible to provide for her. There is nothing in the ketubah what she is going to provide to him. If you like, you can call it the first bill of women's rights. This is this is what it represents. Because the word ketubah and the conditions of the ketubah is, like I said, at what he has to give her, which, as Maimonides qualifies it, and it's also qualified by the Shulchan Aruch, the code of Jewish law, is mainly 10 separate obligations. You have to provide food, clothes, marital relationships, a payment amount if this marriage dissolves by divorce, to pay the medical bills if she is sick, to release her from captivity if she is captive, if she is captured, to bury her if she passes away. Number 8, she stays in your house if the husband passes away first, and she sustains herself there as long that she is alive. Your own daughters from that marriage will continue to benefit from the properties and from what you left for here, and so on. This is mainly the idea of ketubah. The secret is, which is not just a secret, that whether you wrote a ketubah or you did not write a ketubah, by the very fact that you got married, according to Jewish law, you are responsible for those obligations. So you can't come and say, well, I never wrote it, and therefore I don't owe it. The ketubah is mainly to confirm and to make sure that you can't come later and say, I wasn't aware, I didn't know, if I would only know. The ketubah is a confirmation contract. It's not a contract which creates the idea. What I mean to say, simply to understand it of simple terms, there is another type of contract called get in Judaism, which is a divorce document, a divorce contract. The divorce contract is not just a proof that they got divorced. The divorce contract is which accomplishes the divorce. For the husband to divorce his wife, she needs to accept from him that contract called the get. He can tell her and convince her that she is divorced, and he can make all the signs and indications in the world that I'm not your husband. It's not going to help him, nothing. As long as there was a wedding, she is tied to you, and you are responsible for her. You can go to court, and you can settle, and go through all the issues that people go through when they have to settle their divorce. She's still going to be considered your wife until she receives that document called a get. The Torah taught us what creates the separation. The ketubah does not create the marriage. The ketubah is the paper and contract which the sages introduced to us to make sure, listen to that, that the wife feels comfortable and she has peace of mind knowing that it's recorded and signed by witnesses that he is responsible to take care on her. That's what mainly the ketubah is. And like I said before, it doesn't create marriage, because what creates marriage in Judaism is two aspects. One is called kiddushin, which means betrothal, and one is called nisuin, which means chuppah. Happens to be today we are doing both in the same program called the chuppah. But till about 900 years ago, there was two separate venues, celebrations at every Jewish union. The first was called the Kiddushin, or in the biblical term, the Eirusin celebration. Nothing to do with engagement. This is called betrothal in English, which basically it is where the husband places a ring in front of two kosher witnesses. Kosher means that they're not relatives, neither to the groom, nor to the bride, nor to each other, and they're also behaving in a style which the halacha determines as being kosher Jews. When they watch the groom placing the ring and making a statement, "Arei at mekudeshet li betabat zo kedat Moshe v'Yisrael," "Behold, you are betrothed with this ring according to the laws of Moses in Israel." At that point, she is assigned to this husband. If she wants to leave him, right after that moment, she needs a divorce. But they are not married. She is betrothed, but not married. Married means when the husband and wife move in together and live as husband and wife in a home of their own. That's called marriage. So the way it worked till about 900 years ago was as follows. Usually the married couples were a little younger than today, actually much younger than today. Every year they're becoming much more younger and younger. But they were married. The way it worked, that they were introduced to each other, maybe to a matchmaker, maybe to a family member, maybe they met and they liked each other. I don't know exactly. But when they decided, we're going to get married, he proposed, and there was an engagement. Afterwards is when they made a ceremony called the ceremony of Kiddushin, of betrothal. And it carried its own venue. There was a party and a celebration. Obviously, there's a mitzvah to get married. So before placing the ring, it's like before you eat matzah, before you blow the shofar, you make a bracha. Asher kiddushanu. Happens to be it's a very long bracha, not a usual bracha. So the sages say, not every groom actually knows how to recite the bracha. Let's give it to the rabbi officiating the wedding, and this became his job, to say the bracha. And the Rambam, Maimonides, has a son, Rabbi Avraham ben Arambam, which he says that he heard from his father that the reason that stayed, that every groom and every bride and every Jewish wedding, there is the rabbi officiating the wedding, makes the blessing, is simply not to distinguish between one groom and the other. Oh, he knew how to say a bracha. Oh, he went to your wedding. Oh, yeah, yeah, he didn't know how to say a bracha. The rabbi had to say it. You know, we don't have to tell you what it means in the shtetl type of communities. So across the board, no one says his own bracha. Always, till today, with all the scholarship which exists in Judaism, the sensitivity to make sure that every groom and bride feel comfortable, and every bride feels she got the boy who is the best, and every boy feels they got the bride who is the best, the blessing belongs to the rabbi, the officiating rabbi. They went home right after that, each one to their own home. The boy went back to the dormitory, maybe to the yeshiva, or he went to his parents' house. The girl went to her parents' house. And for an entire year, they used to exchange gifts. maybe, you know, messages, but they were never considered as a full husband and wife, even though she could not look at any man anymore because that was, she has a husband. She's separated from everybody. That's actually the word kiddushin in Hebrew. That's what you call betrothal, kiddushin. Kiddushin, says the Talmud, means assigned to one and separated from everybody else. The moment she had accepted that ring, she sold her freedom of being married to any candidate, to any potential man. At that point, I have a husband, he has a wife, and that was the kiddushin. Which, by the way, in Judaism, the marriage goes that the husband acquires the woman, as the Torah says, ki yikach ish isha. Separate discussion. Yeah? No, no, no covering your hair, nothing. She was a regular, non-married girl, just as she was, and she was able to have fun with her friends as she was. There was no responsibilities of nothing. But she was calm in her mind, knowing that she has a man in her life. A year later, Naomi got together. They are going to get married, nisuin. At that point, they appointed a house representing his house, which we call the chuppah today, and where the groom lets the bride come into the home, and they recited seven blessings, and it's only at that point when he became financially responsible for her. And it's at that point when he had to grant her the ketubah contract, which shares his financial responsibilities. That was another celebration. So Rashi writes that in France, about 900 plus years ago, you think we know about a financial crisis? They had a real financial crisis, and the parents came together and they said, two venues after 12 months again, it cost a lot of geld. It's impossible. You laugh. That was the reason. When the rabbis got together, there was leadership of those days when you could have arranged and able to help each other. And the leadership of Jews came together, Sephardic, Ashkenazic, Litvish, Hasidic, all got together and they said, okay, no more. One venue. It's called the chasana, the wedding. At the same chuppah, we're going to do two stages. Stage one is going to be, which we initiate the chuppah, is where the rabbi is going to make a blessing on behalf of the groom and bride, the blessing of kiddushin, of marriage, of betrothal. At that point, we're going to appoint two witnesses where they're going to watch the groom placing the ring on the bride's index finger and make a statement of Areat Mekudeshetli. We will see that the bride had accepted it and she was calm and she was not rejecting it. At that point, we had just finished stage one, but let's go straight into stage two. We bring out the ketubah. Let's read it in public so he knows, the groom knows that, don't know monkey business over here. We read it, everybody knows what was read and it was signed. And then we are making seven blessings of praise and thanksgiving to God all the way till the Odi Shama. We break the cup, mazel tov. Now we have one party covers, you know, both programs, and a wedding deserves a party. So financial crisis, you make it work. But not two, if you can make it into one. That's what, and that's how the Jewish chuppah was developed till today. The ketubah, which you have here in front of you, is mainly, first of all, it's written in Aramaic. And many times people ask, Rabbi, isn't it time to translate it into modern day Hebrew or whatever other language? We keep it throughout with the same traditional Aramaic language. And there's a reason for it, which our halachic authorities share with us, a very simple but very meaningful reason. You have to remember, the original ketubah, which is already recorded by Maimonides and even before, and in Shulchan Aruch and in the Talmud, was written by people who spoke Aramaic. That was the Yiddish, that was their language. So when they recorded a ketubah, they had all the knowledge that we need to have to make sure that every detail, in every condition, in every idea about Jewish marriage is incorporated properly, they had the divine wisdom. So in the Aramaic words, everything is there. When we're going to decide to write that on Hebrew Ketuvah, you can imagine the lawyers and the Bet Mishpat and the Israeli Supreme Court. Everyone's going to find another term to emphasize, to delete. Lomirap, enough. Let's keep to the original, and that's how it's kept all the way till today. But at the same time, it is kosher 100% that the rabbi officiating the wedding shares with you an English translation, so at least we know where it starts. The ketubah, basically what we have today, and the original ketubah, which is the same ketubah all over. A little ins and there, you know, sometimes they have Sephardic Israeli ketubahs that says that he's never going to leave Israel. The funny thing is, you know, I'm marrying Israelis at the hotels in Seattle, and they still say we're never going to leave Israel. I say, what do you mean? You know, what do you say? that's the ketubah that grandma said we should keep. Go move where grandma lives and we'll talk then. The original ketubah starts off with the date of the wedding. But the truth is, it's not the date of the wedding only. The date and the place, which is the first two lines of the ketubah, is mainly telling us where is the place and which date did the witnesses see the groom committing himself to the conditions of the ketubah. And I'm mentioning it because sometimes you can fill up that contract not necessarily where the wedding hall is taking place. You can do it in the rabbi's office, and the wedding is in a different town. I live in Bellevue, Washington. For my Chabad house, you just cross the road and you are in Redmond, Washington. There's a street called Bell Red Road, separates Bellevue and Redmond. Redmond is not Bellevue, Bellevue is not Redmond. They have two mayors, two different police. They have their issues, we have our own issues. And the location has to be proper. So you have to do it, and that's where it records, where was that legal commitment that the groom confirmed in front of witnesses that I am ready to sign it. The date is the same thing. It's a more common issue. Sometimes the wedding is after sunset, or it was meant to be before sunset. And you know, on the Jewish calendar, before sunset means that today is Wednesday. And once you go past sunset, especially when it becomes dark outside, that's already Thursday, even though it's only Wednesday night. And it's a different day. Today was the 22nd of Menachem Av. In a couple hours before midnight, it's already the 23rd of Menachem Av. And then the ketubah might be invalid because you didn't write it on the right day. And again, the ketubah is what the witnesses are testifying what they saw. The fact that some grooms signed the ketubah is in addition to the witnesses. And that also makes the difference between a get and a ketubah. Get is the husband is speaking. I am divorcing you, I'm letting you go. And the witnesses are testifying that they heard the husband say it. Ketubah is the witnesses say, we heard the husband confirming, it's their statement. So either way, you write the date, and they say, what did we see? We saw that, even though they didn't see it yet, but that's the background of this ketubah obligations that he tells here, be my wife according to the laws of Moses in Israel. And then he takes upon himself four different obligations. Number one, he's going to take care of her. And what is going to take care of her? It's being specified. I'm going to work in order to provide for you. And I'm going to make sure that you have what to eat. And I'm going to confirm that I'm going to live as a husband and wife. And then he mentions three monetary obligations. Three, not only one. Monetary obligation, all those obligations, by the way, has to do if he will decide to divorce her. While they are married, everything he has to give to her. But if you divorce her, the Torah wanted to make sure that you never rush to divorce. Really. And therefore, was ketubah instituted, the payment of ketubah, knowing that you're going to have to pay a price for the divorce, you're not going to rush it. You're going to think about it twice or more than twice by saying, I'm not rushing. This is going to cost me a sach geld. It's going to cost me a lot of money. There is no reason for me to rush it. You know what? She's wrong, but let's try to figure it out. I don't want to end up paying. This is the main ketubah obligation, which has an ancient value described as 200 zuz. That part is not that expensive. In those days, it was expensive. It's 2 pounds of silver. How much it is? Look on the Wall Street Journal. Every day it's different, but, you know, nish gefrelach, not so bad. But then you take upon yourself two additional obligations. Obligation number two is because, as the Talmud says, we want to show our appreciation to this young lady for being ready to live with me. So in addition to what I owe here, the sage just says, come on, give you some, in Israeli Arabic, they call it bakshish. Bakshish means tosefet. Come on, give us something in addition to what you really owe here. That, a Turkish word, okay. I call it a Yiddish word. Yiddish in Israel is a mix of Turkish with English, with who knows what, with Afrikaan, with... Anyway, that additional tosefet is actually much, much more expensive than the original payment. It's a different type of ancient coins called skukim kesef. It's pure silver. The original coin that the rabbis were referring to was 7% copper, and the eighth was silver. Skukim was medieval times. That was the type of coin which is purely silver, which basically it's calculated, according to many, as being 57 kilo, more than 106 pounds of silver, of pure silver. Oh, now you're thinking already. 106 pounds of silver to pay her, and she's not even going to be my wife. Listen, it's not the fact that the money. You give it the money to somebody you don't want to live with. And then, in addition, it's a third payment that's mentioned in the ketubah, that whatever properties she brought with her, and it doesn't have to be real estate. It can be real estate, and it can be movable objects. She bought a car, she brought a table, a chair, whatever she brought, we officially evaluate it, and you take responsibility that when the marriage dissolves, you're going to give her what the original value was when you got married. So again, obviously it depends how many years you live with her. Sometimes there's an increase in the value, sometimes there's a decrease in the value, but it's all money. What's more than that, this came from one of the Chachamim, one of the sages, by the name of Rav Shimon ben Shotach. You know what he said? It's not enough to keep the woman happy. We got to do something even stronger than that. And he instituted something which, again, was accepted by all the rabbis. That's why it's in every ketubah. That the husband is going to lean all his properties for the ketubah. Not only lean his properties, but even, as we're going to see soon, we're going to read it inside, the shirt of his back is leaned for the ketubah obligation. So if you get a divorce and you say, I have no money, what do you want? Asnish, take off, let's go. We're going to go on eBay, we're going to sell you gatkes, we're going to sell everything you own. We're going to make sure you're left with nothing, because whatever you own is first leaned towards the ketubah. So the interesting phenomenon of a ketubah is how much our sages wanted to make sure that the house is being kept with proper shalom bayit. The woman should never have a concern one day he gets up in a mad mood and he tells me to go and I'm left with nothing. He's not going to rush because he has a lot to take care of you before he can arrange that. Let's take for a moment and read some of the ketubah, okay? So the ketubah, obviously, like I said before, begins on there. Then you have to write the day of the week. If it's to Sunday or to Friday, that's when you can make weddings, the day of the week. Then you write the day of the Hebrew month. So the rabbi also has to be very clear what day, which month, and how you spell the dates. And you write which year we are. And so now we are 5773 after the creation of the world. This is the number of years, the way we count it. So this is the traditional way, which is the Hebrew date of the calendar. At that point, you write, where are we signing it? And you say, according to the manner in which we count dates here in Bellevue, Washington, San Diego, California, wherever you are. And it's important, it's interesting. Today it's less significant, but in the ancient days, when they wrote the local currency, so the name of the place would represent what value he took upon himself based on the currency. You can write the word dinar, and dinar in Jordan means one value, and dinar in Saudi Arabia can mean another value. Or you can write dollar. Is it American dollar? Is it Canadian dollar? Is it, you know, what is it? So they wrote the location. Okay? Here, the groom, the bridegroom, so here you write his name, very important to provide your proper name, because then if the name was wrong, so you never really had a ketubah. So you write the name, the son of, and here you count Jewish lineage, and Jewish lineage goes according to the father. If your father is a Kohen, you're a Kohen. Your father is a Levi, you're a Levi. So you write the name of the groom and the name of his father, said to this, and depends what she is. We don't write specifically this what, because not every bride shares the same status. If she was married before, she's a divorcee, or she's a widow, or she's a convert, she gets different amounts than a regular non-married virgin. So therefore, you have to specify what your status is. Grusha, Almana, Gioret, Betula. And you write a title, and you get me to name the daughter of. And what did he say to her? Be my wife according to the laws of Moses and Israel. And then what? This is in contract. I will work. Number two, honor. You know that Jewish law makes a tremendous emphasis of honor that the husband needs to have to his wife, to the point that the Talmud says, and it's codified in Jewish law, that the sages used to tell to their students, you want to make a living? Not only that, you want to become rich? We have a secret for you. And I'm always surprised, you know, we speak so much about how to deal with financial situations, and nobody puts it on the front page of the New York Times. What's the secret for wealth? No, not just have a wife. That can cost you whatever. The Talmud says you want to become rich, you got to honor your wife. Honoring your wife is the channel for wealth. Okay? I will work, honor, feed, and support you in the custom of Jewish men who work, honor, feed, and support their wives faithfully. Faithfully means, first of all, that the money is honest money. Faithfully is also translated by our sages that you never be cheap on your wife. Kushta. That's what faithful is. It's interesting, just in parentheses, sometimes you're going to hear people have issues in their marriage, and the rabbi said, you got to check your ketubah, see if it's written properly. I'm not sure how much, you know, attention is, how much sources there is for this concept, but I did hear a story, actually read a story, one of the great rabbis in Poland, who a couple came to him, and they said they have some marriage problems. He said, let me see your ketubah. And they looked in the ketubah, and the word faithful in Hebrew, I'm sorry, in Aramaic, the way it's written in the ketubah, is the word bekushta. Kushta means faithful. Kuf, vav, shin, tet, aleph. That same word, if you, instead of writing mit a tet, you write bekushta mit a taf. Anyone speaking Hebrew here? What's a keshet in Hebrew? A rainbow or a bow. Exactly. A bow is called a keshet. So when you say, I'm supporting you with a bow, what does it mean? And he looked at the ketubah. This is the Rebbe of Shinova, a great Hasidic master. He said, take a look. You want to know what the problem is? When the ketubah was written, instead of writing with a tet, they wrote kushta with a taf. And now you keep on shooting arrows instead of supporting it faithfully. Fix the ketubah and you're going to have a good marriage. Next. And afterwards, what does it say? I will give you the settlement of, in Yirmirayit, either 200 or half of it if she's not a virgin, of silver zuzim, which is due to you according to either biblical law for a virgin or rabbinic law for a non-virgin, as well as your food, clothing, necessities of life, which is translated as marital relationships, according to the universal custom. And then the second two paragraphs is all about the money that you're going to give you, not now, if that marriage dissolves. Mises, which is the bride's name, agreed and became his wife, this dowry that she brought from your father's house, whether in silver, gold, jewelry, clothing, home furnishing, or bathing. Mister, which is the name of the groom, your bridegroom, accept as being worth, and you write the amount of silver pieces, zuzim at his worth, which, like I said, it became more a generic volume, even though there are still communities which specify exactly which he brought. I actually saw recently a ketuvah from a Bukharian Jew written in the late 1800s. I never saw such a thing. 10 lines, what she brought. 2 goats, a chicken, a sheep, feeding of grass. You can imagine, like a real specified list, a towel, a bed cover, a tichel, a scheitel. I mean, what is going on? You know, you want to make sure you get your money's worth, right? You are specifically describing every part of it. So this is what I said earlier, is what we mentioning not only the original 200 plus the additional, what she gives her in addition to what is required, but also responsibility for what she brought in. Continue to the next page. Mr. again, our bridegroom, made this declaration. This obligation of this marriage contract, the ketuvah, this dowry, which is the second obligation, and this additional amount, which is the third obligation, I accept upon myself and upon my heirs after me. It can be paid from the entire best part of the property and possessions that I own under all the heavens. Whether I own this property already or will own it in the future, it includes both mortgageable property and non-mortgageable property, all of it shall be mortgaged and bond as security to pay this marriage contract, this dowry, and this additional amount. It can be taken from me, even from the shirt on my back, during my lifetime and after my lifetime, from this day and forever. He left a shirt. Somebody's gonna sell it. Exactly that. Now, the interesting thing is, a year and a half ago, I believe it was February 27th, when the war broke out between Ukraine and Russia, when was it? February? The second night after the war began, I get a call in the middle of the night. Middle of the night means, yes, after 12 o'clock. And then I don't answer. Then I get 5 minutes, another call. I obviously decide to answer. This is two rabbis, separately, each one running away from the Ukraine that night. They are on the way to, they don't know yet. They say there is a border up in Romania. There was another place, not below, to Poland. Anyway, what's their question? Rabbi Farkash, I know that you're dealing with marriage and ketubah. We are running, but we left the ketubah back home. What's our status? Are we okay to continue as husband and wife if we don't have a ketubah? Now, this goes back to a very interesting halacha. It's not enough to write a ketubah and present it at the chuppah. It is forbidden to leave as husband and wife if the wife does not know where her ketubah is. You don't have to carry it with you 24/7. And for sure, don't try to be OCD about it. But you need to know that the ketubah exists. In different communities and different customs, some used to keep the ketubah by their mothers, by their parents, by uncles, a save, whatever you want. You want to make sure that you can bring it out if necessary. And the Jewish law is that because we want to make sure that the husband doesn't think that in any way he's getting out of this deal and giving his wife a hard time, we don't want you to live as a husband and wife without a ketubah. It actually said asur, forbidden. That's the word in halacha. But now you're running from the Russians and you don't know, are they going to burn down the city and there's no more ketubah left and then we don't have a ketubah? So matter of fact, this is also discussed in Shulchan Aruch. They don't talk about Russia, Ukraine. They talk about a city which was conquered by an enemy and they're burning down the city. What should people do? And they actually introduced a different type of ketubah called the ketubah de irchesa, the lost ketubah. We write a new contract based on the information of the original contract. However, getting into the details, I was able to share with them that as long as we don't hear that they are looting the cities and burning down the houses, you can assume and rely that the ketubah is in their full tack. And as long as you know you locked your door and everything is okay, so let's continue your escape, but relax about the ketubah for now. So far, we don't hear that the cities are being burning down. But I shared that with my mother when I speak to you once a week. And I told the mommy, I had such an interesting shiloh this week. Two rabbis called me about the ketubah, and I had to figure out a way to help them to say that it's okay to continue running. Can you imagine modern day, we should be dealing with such questions? She tells me, it's so funny you're mentioning it, because my mother told me, 1948, they lived in the old city of Jerusalem. And it was on a Friday when they were chased out of their homes. The Jordanians, after bombing the old city, the Jewish community in the old city of Jerusalem, the women and the children were able to leave their homes. And my mother was a little baby in her mother's arms as she was making her way out of the city of Jerusalem with her parents and grandparents lived for many years. And they went to a nearby neighborhood called Katamon. And they see from their neighborhood smoke coming out of the old city, the houses are being put in fire by the Jordanians. And your mother told you that it was the rabbi of the community, she said the name, Rabbi Velbel Mintzberg, came on Friday to the people in telling them, guys, you can't stay home with your wives tonight until you fix your ketubah, if you left your ketubah back in the old city. Because if your ketubah is burned and you have no ketubah left, that's what we said earlier. The ketubah is an integral part of a Jewish couple's life, not only at the wedding, not only the time when it has to be used, if need to be used, but throughout your marriage, like I said in the beginning of class, there is the yud and the hey of the ish and the isha, there is the vav and the hey, which is being brought in by the ketubah, yud ke, vav ke. Make sure your ketubah is fully complete. Check it out with your local rabbis, wherever your destination is, and you should all have a good marriage and a good life. Thank you.
please visit myjli.com to learn more about JLI's multiple educational offerings.